Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to the first in a series of Anime Boston 2017 interview specials. On today's episode, we'll be chatting with Christopher R. Sabat, better known as the Prince of All Saiyans Vegeta in Dragon Ball Z, Kuwabara in Yu Yu Hakusho, Ghidorah in Sergeant Frog, All Might on My Hero Academia, and the duo of Captain Smiley and Star in Comic Jumper. B3 was also joined by Wicked Anime, WAMC Northeast Public Radio, Operation Rainfall, and Mythical Entertainment for this interview, all of whom asked some pretty good questions. So, without further ado, let us dive into this Anime Boston 2017 interview special with Christopher R. Sabat.
I'm from WMC Northeast Public Radio.
Oh, I've seen your microphones. They're great.
Yeah, right there. Brilliant. All right, so I'll start it off with a little bit more of like a hard-hitting kind of guy. Why do you think that in North America, in Western culture, anime doesn't get necessarily the respect it deserves?
That seems like a pretty slanted question, actually, because okay. I think anime gets a lot of respect, especially as a guy who's been doing this since 1998, to see what the respect level was back then versus now, it's infinitely different. So I think what's weird is I've seen not only people embracing anime that never would have kind of even touched it or understood it before, just because of the gross exposure we have to it now. Even anime dubbing used to be kind of the lowest rung on the totem pole of voice acting to some degree. Anime was always seen as this sort of lesser than thing to other types of voice acting. But as anime popularity has increased, I mean, there's, 30, 40,000 people outside. I've found people who work in regular, prelay cartoons and films have been coming to me now saying, like, hey, how do we get into that anime thing? Because that seems pretty cool. So I'd say that, based on my experience, I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's not respected as much. But I feel like people know what anime is now, and they understand it. I think there's a great amount of acceptance for it. Maybe not everyone loves it, but the fact that we're seeing it on TV every night, and it's quality, and there's so much of it, and there's so much of it happening kind of instantly now, that with Funimation simuldubs and Crunchyroll putting their stuff up right away, you can watch TV as if you were watching it in Japan, practically, maybe on a 3 weeks late if you like the dub or something like that. But still, it's pretty remarkable by comparison, where we had to wait you know, 15 years just to get the first dub of Dragon Ball, it seems. So,
Joe Sigadell, Operation Rainfall. What was your first reaction to seeing Dragon Ball Super in its original Japanese form? Was it a sure thing that it was going to come over here as a dub and that you would be providing the voice of Vegeta once again?
When I first heard that there was going to be a new series, I wasn't even sure if it was real. There were a lot of rumors around it. There were a lot of stories about whether there was going to be a series. Of course, we already had our wake-up call a couple years beforehand when we did the two, you know, motion pictures, mm-hmm. Resurrection F and Battle of Gods. So when I first heard that the anime was coming, I wasn't even sure if that was, you know, true or not. Once we found out it was true, we had to wait until I actually saw something, because in the production business, nothing is true until you actually see it, like, sitting in front of you, and then we did. I was a little worried because I noticed that they were kind of retracing the steps of the two previous movies, mm-hmm. And that had me a little worried that they were just sort of recycling the same story, but as we've been dubbing it, and we're pretty far along now, or like far enough along for me to be able to say this, I feel like the retelling of Dragon Ball Super, of the same kind of story elements as Dragon Ball Resurrection F and Battle of Gods, is actually a really interesting way of retelling it. They change just enough things and add just enough detail to where it's actually pretty fascinating to watch. I think it's very entertaining, and we're about to get into, you know, post episode 26, some really amazing story elements that are just pretty mind-blowing. I didn't ever expect it would go this far. So, you know, I've always said that I'm either going to be the voice of Vegeta on Dragon Ball. Like, when it was unsure as to whether we were going to be dubbing it or not, I used to tell people, like, I'm going to be the voice of Vegeta on Dragon Ball Super, or I will murder the person who is the voice of Vegeta in Dragon Ball Super, and then I'll be in jail. either way, it'll be interesting for you guys. So, fortunately, I'm the voice of Vegeta, and I will be that voice until I die from exhaustion, which could be within the next couple of years. So,
hopefully not.
I hope not either.
Thank you.
Sure thing.
So, my name's Alexandra.
I just tweeted for you, so.
I'm from Mythical Entertainment.
So your company doesn't really exist?
Right.
It's just Mythical.
It is.
Okay.
The story is what just told about it.
Oh, hold on a minute. I apologize for this. Hold on. Okay, I'm sorry. I just got a text from Goku.
That's so legit. So you voiced a lot of characters from my childhood that I grew up with, and they all had very distinct personalities. I was just wondering what you had to do to prepare to keep them from blending together.
Well, in retrospect, I don't think I did enough to keep them from blending together, because when I first started in early, like, I guess 1998, 99, 2000, we were mostly working on Dragon Ball, and by the time I was halfway through Dragon Ball, my voice was so shattered that I was having a hard time keeping the voices separated. In fact, what was kind of a wake-up call to me at one point was, halfway through dubbing the series, I was at an anime convention somewhere. I think it was in California. They all blend together now, because I've been to like over 8,000 of them. Some fan came up to me and said, "Hey man, your Piccolo and your Vegeta voice are kind of starting to sound the same." And I kind of went back to the studio and thought about it, and it's true. Like, my voice had been so wrecked that the voices were just sort of converging on one another. But when it comes to keeping, you know, people like Yu Hakusho, that was nice and fresh because we'd finished Dragon Ball at that point, so it was something nice to focus on. And as I was getting more and more voices, I've seemed to be always cast as like the tough guy with like somewhat of a soul who doesn't really want to be part of the group, but he's kind of begrudgingly part of the group. So I do get kind of typecast a lot as those sorts of kind of, you know, tough guys with souls, sort of. But I don't think I'm the best voice actor when it comes to differentiating voices. There are far better people at that than I am, but I'm very happy to have played so many cool voices. I hope that answered your question in some sort of way. I eat a lot of vegetables. Okay. Sorry, I was just prepping you for your Japanese interviews later, so.
Okay, excellent.
All right, thank you.
I'm Andrew Fleming from Wicked Anime, and this is my brother Jonathan Fleming. From
hey, have I met you guys before?
Yes, yeah. The Skype interview for the Resurrection.
That's right. That's right.
And it's Jonathan coined the term Blooper Saiyan.
Blooper Saiyan. That's right. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you too. So we were wondering if there's some kind of unspoken, unbridled rivalry between you and Sean Schimmel. Any stories?
Well. It's funny, Sean and I do argue from time to time, but in a way that, like, brothers have to argue, because we can't really get, we can get mad at each other, but we can't ever get so mad at each other that we can't work together, because I'm going to see him probably for the rest of my damn life. So we have to, like, we're kind of like common law Saiyan married, sort of. Like, we've just been in the same place for so long that technically we'd need a divorce if we were ever to break up. But what's really funny is that of the two of us, I tend to be the more relaxed kind of... I tend to be pretty relaxed, where Sean is very, like, intense. So where you would imagine, like, Vegeta kind of going, getting really angry about lots of things, that's more Sean's personality. As Goku, just sort of like happy-go-lucky, whatever, just happy to sort of be there. That's typically me. Now, granted, I guess I'm more like Piccolo in that I may not, like, obviously be angry about something, but in the back of my mind I am probably trying to find ways to destroy you or your credit or something like that if you've really pissed me off. So I'm not really the type of person to mess with, because I will mess with you without you knowing it. I will gas lamp you until, like, you just have no will to live anymore. I'm kidding, but I play a lot of pranks on Sean, because Sean is a very intense dude. And so I'll admit there are times when I don't know, I hate to admit this, but, like, there are times when I know how, like, picky and aggro he can be about stuff, that just occasionally I like to kind of poke the ant pile a little bit just to see what'll happen. So that's maybe a Vegeta type of thing to do. But we have a bit of a rivalry sometimes. And sometimes I even take it to the extreme with him, where I'll occasionally send him texts as Vegeta to go, like, what floor are you on? And he'll go, you know, 21. I go, I'm on 18! Damn it! Someday I'll be on the same floor as you, Kakarot. So, yeah, I do, after all these years of playing him and working with Sean for so long, like, I sometimes wonder what it would be like if we were Vegeta and Piccolo and we had to kind of go about our lives, like, as them. So they transcended the anime and now they're just, like, going to conventions and signing autographs and stuff. Anyway, so yeah, I hope that answered some of your questions.
Oh,
yeah, okay.
Hi, I'm Evan Borgo from the Boston Bears Brigade, and this is
Derek Smith.
Hi, Derek.
We also did an interview with you and Sean for the Resurrection Effort.
Yeah. Boston what brigade?
Boston Bastard Brigade.
Bastard?
My name, not
Bastard? Okay, yeah, okay, gotcha.
So, to talk about a bit of a differentiated voice that you did a few years back, probably one of my favorite roles of yours, very underrated, was that of Captain Smiley in Star.
Oh, gosh. People don't bring that up very often. That's Captain Smiley in Star in Twisted Pixels game Comic Jumper.
Yes, probably one of my favorite roles of yours so far.
Thank you so much.
And I wanted to talk about the humor aspect of it, because I remember talking to Brina a few years ago about her playing Gerda, and how the humor aspect of it was like a mixture of, you know, scripted and what was, you know, filtered or off-script.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, how much of the personality of Star and Captain Smiley was, like, right there in the script, or what was the ones that made you just go right off the rails?
I think that the cool thing about working with Josh, the guy who owns Twisted, or sort of the creative director of Twisted Pixel. I think I could say these things. I'm a voice actor. His philosophy on, like, sort of making games and working with actors, typically, at least back in those days, I know Twisted Pixel's about to release, like, a VR game that looks freaking outstanding. Mm-hmm. And I know that they took a different approach with that. But back in those early days, he would usually just come to us at Okatron and say, all right, guys, we're going to bring the awesome. So, guys, just do whatever. And so he let me, like, the kind of the basic script was there, but it was just fun for me to kind of do whatever I really wanted to do. Anytime I had any idea at all, I mean, I was allowed to kind of come up with the voice myself, come up with both voices myself. So it was basically like, if you've never played Comic Jumper, imagine if Yamcha was the main character, but like Vegeta lived, like Yamcha was the main character and he had the S for Superman on his chest, if he was a Superman, would be Vegeta. And it was a sentient kind of creature that lived on his chest and they hated each other. They were like, just like, his chest piece would make fun of him constantly and he was always kind of embarrassed by it. So, yeah, that was one of the most fun games I've ever worked on. And Josh, I've worked with Josh and those guys since their very first game. It was called The Maw.
Yeah.
And then we worked with them again on Gunstringer. I don't know if you played that.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
Then
Twisted Pixel.
Okay, yeah. One game that it just didn't get as much love as it sort of deserved because it was sort of at the end of the Xbox 360 life cycle was Loco Cycle.
Did I love that game so much.
Loco Cycle was the most ridiculous game because it involved like this Mexican mechanic who's working on this bike that got brought into his shop in the middle of the night because it got hit by lightning, and the bike happens to be part of some top secret military program. So as he's fixing it, the bike like powers itself on, and his pant leg gets stuck to the motorcycle, and the motorcycle just drives off because it wants to go to like some Harley rally or something like that on its own. It just wants to go out on the open road, and so the whole game is like this mechanic like dragging behind this bike, but then the bike can do like kung fu and stuff, and it's the weirdest game you'll ever play. Anyway, sorry, I digress, but yes.
Do you have a favorite character that you wish you could voice that you might not have, like, passed up on?
I always wanted to play... Oh, there's two situations. One where I almost got to play the voice of something I would have really liked, although I didn't know even really what it was at the time. But there was a time I did a lot of sessions for this game called Epic, and no one really knew what the game was, but I did a lot of sessions for it. And eventually, they stopped producing it in Dallas, and they had to move it back to California. It turns out they were doing all this test stuff in Dallas, sort of temping the voices for Gears of War. And I was playing Marcus Fenix for a while without really even knowing it. So that was one of those almost could have type things. And the other voice I've always wanted to play was Solid Snake. I've always wanted to be the voice of Solid Snake. And one time during one of the death battles or whatever they do online, they actually cast me to be Solid Snake versus like Sam Fisher or something like that. It was really fun.
So, as I'm sure you're aware, this year is the 25th anniversary of the Yu Yu Hakusho series.
Yeah.
Do you have any fond memories or funny stories you could tell about playing Kuwabara way back when?
The cool thing about the cool thing about working on Yu Yu Hakusho is it was the first show to work on for the most part, right after Dragon Ball Z. It was the kind of the first new experience I'd had. And the best part about it was working with the director. His name is Justin Cook. He was the voice of Yusuke Urameshi. I'm kidding, it's Yusuke, but I call him Yusuke as a joke. And Justin was he was my engineer when he first came to work at Dragon Ball, first came to work at Funimation. And we became really close friends. So working with Justin was like, it was like this flip-flop had happened, and he was now directing me, and Yu Yu Hakusho was such an endearing show. There were a billion great moments working on that show, because Justin was such a perfectionist, and like he would direct it each episode like two or three times just to make sure he got it the way he wanted to. Yeah, a lot of the fun of working on that show had less to do with like actually working on it and more to do with going out with Justin afterwards. Like there were times I, at that time in my life, I had an apartment that was really close to Funimation. And so he would just come over after the session and we would play The Sims. And then I would go to sleep, but he'd stay at my house and he'd keep playing until like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'd wake up and he's still there. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I built a moat around it so that people had to climb through the moat to get to my house, and they'd be in their underwear when they were there. I was like, cool, we need to probably work, don't we? So yeah, those are all good times. I loved working on that show. The cast was great. I still am friends with most of those guys. Like you know, Chuck Huber and John Bergmeier were other main cast members. They're awesome people. John Bergmeier is still, he was the voice of Kurama, still is one of the head writers. He kind of operates the whole operation that heads up all of the you know, translation and kind of writing for all of Funimation's shows.
So with the new live-action movies coming out, Ghost in the Shell just came out, and there's talks of Akira coming out, do you think this takes away from anime coming to the Western part of the world? Or how
no, I again, I think these are the things, like these movies being, live-action movies being made from kind of anime source, does nothing, in my opinion, except still increase awareness for the original material. I just read about the Akira thing this morning. Like, wasn't Jordan Peele approached to do it? If I'd be all about it, man. He seems to take his movies very, like Get Out was one of the best movies I've seen in a long time, and it was so genre bending, and it would be really amazing to see an African American guy direct a primarily Japanese like anime movie. It would just blow my mind. I think he would be one of the people who are young enough to actually understand the importance of keeping the integrity of the movie. So hopefully that sticks. Again, I still feel that anime is fairly mainstream now, and these cons, people are starting to come to it that have no idea what anime even is. They just like to be in the environment. They love the cosplaying, and they like the people here. So yeah, I don't think those movies can do anything but strengthen the popularity of anime in the United States. As long as they don't keep getting whitewashed. but, you know, there's only been a couple of cases, and I think in the case of Ghost in the Shell, I do think that it was an appropriate... I think she was sort of an appropriate cast for that. I don't think Ghost in the Shell was ever meant to be a quote, a Japanese show, really. Like, it never felt like it was meant to be... I feel like a lot of people in Japan try and make their anime not Japanese. I think it's supposed to sort of transcend all of that. So in that one case, I think it kind of works. Even though I already felt like she was in a Ghost in the Shell movie, that movie called Lucy or whatever it was. I walked out of that going like, was this Ghost in the Shell? Did I just get tricked?
So amongst us all being nerds and loving anime and crazy stuff, we love to focus on things like, oh, that character's really cute, or that's my waifu, and that's my character crush, whatever. Besides Bulma, who is actually your anime wife, do you have any other famous anime women that are your waifu or character crush?
Well, for a long time, I had, like, very impure thoughts about Fujiko from Lupin the Third, but I think every... self-respecting teenager probably has had that problem. Problem is, I wasn't a teenager. let's see. Like, I love, like, Nami is ridiculous, as a ridiculous character, but let's see. Other anime waifu crush. Let's see. It's really hard. It's really tricky because there are moments where you think like, oh, I really like this character, and then it's just fan service-y and like female characters aren't always as kind of, you know, thought through. They aren't always as deep as you would want them to be. So, for instance, in Dimension W, which we're doing kind of a box set release of today, I was equally like happy and also weirded out by some of the choices they made for the kind of the female robot character. Like, there were just moments where she seemed really kind of innocent, but yet he has to always slap her and call her a piece of junk all the time. And like, there's this like theme of him hitting her all the time, which really weirds me out. But anyway, yeah, I guess I have to say Fujiko is the closest I have. Nice. I haven't seen her in a long time though, so.
I have to ask because one of our favorite comedies of the last few years, or probably one of our favorite comedies of all time, has to be of Such a Throbbing with you.
Yes.
I want to ask, what were like some of your absolute favorite one-liners to do as Giro?
Wow, it's been so long since I've even seen that show. So long that I realized that show is in like 4:3, like proportionally. And I only know that because I only just started watching it with my daughter, who's 6 now. And I've always swore that was going to be the first anime that I ever introduced her to. It ended up being a lie because the first anime I introduced her to was accidentally Show by Rock. Have you guys seen that at all?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of perfect bubblegum Sanrio cuteness that my daughter just can't watch enough of. But she scratched her head a little bit more at Sergeant Frog than I could have remembered. Like, so I think as a father, I've realized that show may not be as kid friendly as I wanted to believe it was. But she's still watching it with me. I cannot remember a single line from that show. It's been so freaking long, and my memory is so bad. Like, I can barely remember my handler's name, Shane, from the weekend. But I'm gonna forget it within the next 30 minutes. So, but thanks. Do you have another question though? Because I did a lame job answering that one.
So, going back to Yu Yu Hakusho and voicing Kurobara, like, what were some of your favorite moments behind the mic when it came to voicing? Like what you said, a brute with a heart of gold.
Like, half the fun of it was figuring out what his character was going to be, because back in those days we didn't actually have all of the anime in front of us, and there was no internet to speak of. There was, but it was so crude. There was no such thing as a watching a video online or something. You couldn't even download a video. It took you all night to download a photograph back then. So. There weren't fan subs or anything that we could watch to kind of prepare ourselves. So part of the fun of that show was watching how it played out in real time. I never knew what was going to happen to Kuwabara from saga to saga. And eventually I got to play Yusuke's father, Ryzen. I don't know if you recall that character, but he had some pretty epic hair, which is a pretty proud thing for me since I have none. I'd say I loved his love interest. I loved Yukina. Was one of my favorite moments, like when he kind of falls in love or has his pinky finger of love thing that he does with her. And ironically enough, it was Hiei's sister who he didn't quite get along with. The show was just generally, again, that one's even older than Sergeant Frog, so it's hard to kind of remember all the details. I remember we were staying up until 5:30 in the morning those days playing The Sims, so many of my brain cells went to that and other things, so you know how that is. Yes?
With the theme of whitewashing and, diversity going forward in anime, was there a direction you'd like to see anime go?
It's kind of hard to say, like, as far as what sort of anime would I like to see, because it's so culturally it's so culturally bound to Japan right now that there's just certain things that we don't like 100% understand. They don't really jive with our ideas of what kind of life is like in America. But what I would like to see is a lot more co-productions where Americans have a little bit of say in kind of what the story is, a little bit of say in kind of how the characters play out. Not to say that we'd be any better with it, but I think I'd like to see that collaboration happen. Like, some American sensibilities, like possibly, looping in a couple of stronger female characters. I think in all of Dragon Ball Z, I think there's like 6 females, and there's not a single strong one, really, except for maybe Videl, but she still is kind of a housewife. I wouldn't mind seeing some co-productions from some kind of American companies to see what came out of that. I know Dimension W was one of those, but I don't think we had as much say in that as we want to. And working with Japanese clients a lot on video games and so forth, they want ideas from America. They are obsessed. They're as obsessed with America sometimes as we can be of Japan, since we all are obsessed with Japanese culture in this room, I imagine. And so they strive for, they really strive to do what Americans do best, and that's create things. And Japanese are pretty good at creating things, but Americans have, like, this by their own definition, in their own words, we just have this unbridled creativity, and their games kind of tend to be locked into these very specific genres, and they love how creative we allow our games to be. This is back, last conversation I had with these guys were around the time like Red Dead Redemption and stuff like that had come out, and they were just, their minds were blown that anyone could even make a game like that. So we'll see. We'll see. But stronger female characters, I'd like to see that. Although, but not by deleting any of the characters I would play, of course.
Thank you.
Sure thing.
Since you're a big part of Funimation now, obviously there's a big difference between what you're doing now and how you got started back then. Is it tougher for young up-and-coming voice actors to come into the industry, particularly if they want to work for you?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's harder in so much that there are far more people trying to get into anime now, and Dallas has become such a hub for anime voice acting that a lot of people sort of end up there trying to become voice actors. But Funimation has so many shows they're working on constantly that your chances are the same, because while there are far more shows that Funimation is working on, there are far more actors who are trying to get those roles now. As for working directly with me, it can be a little trickier because we work on a lot of game projects and a lot of things we need casting on right away, and I need surefire kind of proven people to do what we're doing. So a lot of the times I let Funimation sort of be a proving ground for new actors, and then I tend to steal actors from their actor pool. And I don't feel bad doing that because I am probably personally responsible for bringing in, you know, hundreds of actors. Because back when we started on Dragon Ball Z in 1998, we had 12 actors that we could work with. That was about all we could find in a massive, just a cattle call of 1,000 actors. I mean, we were barely able to find like 12 people who were willing to work at, you know, the scale that usually is paid for anime voice acting, which is relatively low, especially back then. But yeah, throughout the years, I personally worked with so many new people that I'm now passed that on to other people to let them kind of filter some people out first, and then I usually snag them up once I hear good things from the directors at Funimation.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned women in anime. So being behind the scenes on a lot of shows, are you seeing more progressive roles on the shows you work on, or are you seeing studios get it right?
In anime, a little sometimes. In video games, it's changed quite a bit. I mean, granted, my exposure to a lot of this over the last few years has been things like working with Anthony Birch on Borderlands, and Aaron on Battleborn. Those guys really took the inclusion very seriously. Like, they, you know, Anthony Birch is always preaching about like misogyny in games, and so his games particularly had way more rounded, more balanced characters, and so that's been my experience. And after all the years of just basically getting the same character sides over and over again, like, need deep female sexy voice, need deep voice gruff man, need high-pitched scared guy character, it's nice to actually have some variety in them. And anime is getting, you know, I would say it's getting more progressive, but at the same time, anime tends to kind of repeat itself a lot. Like, I would say if I had, and some people might slap me because I am at a massive anime convention for this, but sometimes I look around like Anime Expo and I go from booth to booth and I go, what? You could just pretty much, I don't even know why they like develop new characters. I don't know why they just don't put them all into a pool and then just reuse them, because it seems like they do anyway. Like, the characters are, a lot of the character design is so similar from anime to anime that it's a little bit irritating. Then again, there's shows like My Hero Academia, which we're having the premiere of tomorrow for the second season dub. That show blows my freaking mind. That is the coolest combination between like Western and Eastern influences in animation, and that's, of course, it's Bones, so they always kick ass on everything they do. But you just do. I do see a lot of these shows. Like, I look at them, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference between them because a lot of them just seem to have the same kind of style. But I guess as production processes are becoming kind of easier and more accessible for more people, they can do kind of digital animation faster. It allows them to work. Allows them to be a little bit more creative.
Very cool. Thank you.
You actually spoke, just said something about My Hero Academia, and I just gotta say, first off, All Might is probably one of the greatest superheroes, probably. ever created.
Yeah, he's amazing.
So what was it like actually experiencing being able to play a guy who is a true superhero, like somebody who is like one, probably one of the best superheroes?
It was superhero. Well, it was, first of all, it was very stressful getting the role, because I auditioned for it, and then Colleen said, "Hey, you're in my favorites, but I want you to do a couple more passes on what you'd like to do. Like, I'd like to hear some other options on it." And so I did a few iterations of it, and I was really worried that, you know, it's the first role I've really wanted in a long time, because with a guy with my voice, you'd be surprised how little use there is for it sometimes in anime, because most shows are about, like, teenagers, and I go into audition sometimes at Funimation, look open the folder, I'm like, well, Todd Haberkorn, Jeremy Lee, okay, Vic Mignon is going to do this, and I flip through it knowing that my voice isn't appropriate for it. And there have been a few times in the past where I've kind of spoken up and said, I really want an honest shot at kind of making this happen. One of them was on Panty and Stocking, and then the next one was on My Hero Academia. And getting to play that role is so interesting, because he gets to play this hero character, and he really means it, but it's also, All Might is a voice that's put on. It's artificial, and it's the voice that he kind of feels that people want to hear. And what's nice is to have this dichotomy between this superhero voice and a guy who just is sort of dying slowly. There's no real indication of it, but it sure seems like when you're spitting up blood every day that there's maybe something wrong with you. Hoping I'm not spoiling anything, but I mean, read one clip about My Hero Academia, you're going to find all this stuff. So the fun for me is kind of going from the voice, the All Might voice, that's sort of a put-on voice, to what sounds like a guy's actual voice. Like, I call him No Might, sort of. It's such a fun role to play, and also extremely exhausting too. Like, it's another Dragon Ball-y type of role where it's a lot of hardcore yelling, big voice. It's also fun because it kind of makes sense thematically that I would play that character, because he's kind of the embodiment of all the characters I've ever played, all sort of wrapped into one thing. And Josh Briner, who plays Deku in the dub, he's relatively newer, so I feel like, in a way, there's this weird passing of the torch thing that's happening between me and Justin, even though he gets a little defensive. He's like, I mean, it's not my first role ever. I've done other things. I'm like, shut up, this is your first role. So he's a... Yeah, it's great. And having Colleen direct it, she works in-house at Funimation. Colleen Klinkenbeard, she's the voice of everything. And having her actually directing at the helm is really special, too, because she works in-house at Funimation doing a lot of stuff, and she doesn't really get a chance to jump in to direct very often. So when it happens, she's very excited because she doesn't get to do it, and I'm very excited because she's really freaking good at it. Yeah.
Let's talk about Full Metal Alchemist, because of the character of Alex Louis Armstrong, or Alex Louis Armstrong, however you want to pronounce this. Was there a bit of a challenge with the key to balancing his toughness and daintiness, if you want to call him that?
It's funny you mention that, because All Might to me was... that's weird, we were just talking about that. They are very similar characters. But Alex Louis Armstrong, it was one of the easier characters to play, because it was in my range, and all I had to do was watch the video, and it was so evident how I was supposed to read all the lines. Like, his character was animated in such a way where you always sort of knew exactly what to do. Like, I've been doing it for so long now, it's easy to kind of look at something. When a character doesn't give you very much to go on, that's when it's a little harder, when they don't animate the face that well. But, like, the dude poses, he's got sparkles coming off his head, he's like the most adorable, loving character, and at the same time, like, when he's fierce, he's like super fierce. And he also plays into kind of the Japanese comedy character, where they kind of repeat the same thing over and over again. He's been an excellent character to play. I kind of wish they'd revamp that series again. I would still love to see more of it. I know Vic would love to see more of it too.
Yeah,
Now,
WAMC?
I'm in a, close enough. As you can tell, I'm in a public radio. I get paid for my voice.
I'm sorry that your profession's going away very soon, yeah. Thanks to Donald J. Trump.
We're trying to fix it with you know, podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
We'll see. I get paid for my voice. You get paid for your voice.
Right.
What are some of the difficulties you see at the end of the day using your voice? Like, whether it be coming home and, like, being just parched, but or just difficult roles. Is there something that obviously most people wouldn't see?
Well, what people, I think, sometimes don't realize, not only can it be, like, it could be my age or something, but when I was first doing, you know, Dragon Ball Z in the late 90s, early 2000s, whatever, I could scream as Vegeta all day. I mean, I was doing 8-9 hour sessions a day just trying to get that stuff done. Now, I do like 3 or 4 hours of working on Vegeta, and I feel physically and mentally exhausted afterwards, and sometimes I'll even have like flu-like symptoms the next day if it's a really loud screaming session. Like, it does something to me physically. Like, I don't know if it releases some sort of like, I don't know if it releases some sort of lactic acid into my system, because I am, as stressful as it sounds, it can be to make those voices, because you really have to tighten your whole body, and you're like, when you're yelling like that, you really have to feel the emotion that the character is feeling in order to even sound as good as you should. You know what I mean? Like, you can always throw it away. You can always phone it in, but I just don't believe in doing that. So it's exhausting. Another thing that's hard about being a voice actor, and fortunately I've combated this by owning a studio and doing a lot of other things, is that if your voice gets wrecked on a part, and it's at the beginning of the week, you might not be able to do any more work for the rest of the week. So, you know, the union right now is fighting for sort of hazard pay for those sorts of roles, and I definitely support that, because I typically get cast as guys who screw their voices up due to scream a lot, and it is physically and mentally exhausting. And it's funny, my wife could even tell when I've been working as Vegeta. She's like, "You've been recording Vegeta today, haven't you?" I'm like, "Yes, why?" And I'm like, "Oh, that's why. Yeah, I'm being an asshole." So, yeah, working as a voice actor is one of the most amazing things, because, you know, once you start doing commercial voiceover, which is what really pays great money, then I'll walk out of the room kind of chuckling to myself as to how easy it would be. Like, I have a session on Monday I will say 3 sentences that are not complex sentences. I'm talking like, I will say 15 words and I'll probably get paid like $750 a word. You know what I mean? It can be so lucrative for such a simple thing. And you really have to remove yourself from the idea of like, am I really getting paid this much to remember that, you know, they're using your voice as a branding tool, so it has value to them as well. But man, it is, once you kind of get deep in the voice acting thing and you start actually making money like some proper voice people do, it's insane. Now, people who work on camera, for instance, make a ton of money in commercials. I was in a Budweiser commercial one time, and I normally don't go out for a lot of on-camera stuff, but my agent said, they're looking for, like, quirky, weird people. And I'm like, all right, I'll go. And I was on camera for about a second and a half. And it was in a group of people. What's funny is it's like me, I guess they wanted quirky, weird people, but they must not have said that to the females that showed up, because all the girls who showed up were like for some modeling agency. So they're like foot and a half taller than I am, and I'm just this dorky guy like trying, like pretending to talk to them at a bar. And there were a bunch of other people. But I got on camera for about a second and a half, and that commercial was voiced by George Clooney too. Like, he narrated by George Clooney. I made around $35,000 just for being like on that commercial for a second and a half. Like, just like, you could barely, if you didn't realize, if I didn't tell you I was on the commercial, you wouldn't even see it. So there are benefits to kind of being a voice actor, and sometimes, you know, if you can strike gold like that, it's one of the most amazing things. You walk out of the room going like, I can't believe I actually get paid to do this. So
can I have a job?
Yes. Yes.
When it comes to finding new talent, with scouting new talent, what are some of the avenues you use? Is YouTube a big one, or is like Twitch or SoundCloud? You know,
typically I don't go online to find talent that much. That we have so many people requesting to be talent at Okertron and at Funimation. I can usually pick from people who I either know or I know through somebody. A lot of it comes from recommendations from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I also I'm part at my studio. We teach classes as well. Chris Rager, who's the voice of Mr. Satan, he was also the voice of Torg in Borderlands. He kind of hosts these classes at our studio on Tuesday nights, and I do find a lot of new talent in those classes as well. And anytime anyone's able to offer, it, like, if anyone's interested in being a voice actor, taking classes, especially with someone as important as like a casting director, it can be very helpful to your career. So I see people that way, but a lot of times just people who somehow got my email address and emailed me a demo. Probably the funniest way anyone got a voice role with me was this kid who came up to the studio during one of the few times that we'd ever had a down day at the studio where we didn't have anything to record at all. So we were just doing this complete like renovation of like removing some wires and moving some new speakers in and whatever. And I love it when all the studios are empty because we play this album from it's called Zootropa, and it's this album that has to be played on 5 CDs or 5 vinyl players. Flaming Lips album. So we'll typically play it on multiple, like since we have multiple rooms, we leave the door open, we play it, and it's really fun. Well, it's super loud. It's the loudest it usually ever is in our studio, and I get a call from a client, and I'm on the phone with the client. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I got to step outside for 1 second. I got to open the door, and standing right there is some kid standing there kind of like going, Mr. Savitt, and he looks up and he realizes that I guess I've cut him off while he was practicing what he was going to say to me when he knocked on the door, since I sort of surprised him and walked out. He's like, I was wondering if I could get, I'm like, hey, I'm really sorry. I never big time people, but I got big time you on this one because I have a client on the phone. Hold on a minute. Raleigh, I asked the engineer, just take this guy's demo and talk to him for a second. And I'll talk to you later. So I'm on the phone and I leave and I never saw him again. But we listened to his demo. And it was really good, so we started casting on stuff. The guy's name is Clifford Chapin. I don't know if you're familiar with his work now, but he's on My Hero Academia now. He plays Deku's adversary on that show. I forgot what his name is. I cast him as Kaba on the in Dragon Ball Super. He's going to be playing like Vegeta, sort of the Vegeta alternate universe Vegeta character. But he turned out to be an amazing voice actor too, and it was sort of a stroke of luck, and I always remember that. So I guess sometimes, please don't show up in my studio, it doesn't always work out that way, but that was one case where it just sort of worked out in a magical, kind of theatrical sort of way.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today.
Let's sorry.
Mr. Savitt, a round of applause.
Yes. Yes, thank you, me. Thank you, me. I'm going to go ahead and finish this for you.
Thank you, and we're going to be for a few minutes, and we are going to